Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today we're talking about psychological safety while working remotely. Employers often ask their employees to bring their whole self to work. Companies ask employees to engage in inclusion endeavors and to help the organization achieve its mission as it relates to culture, diversity, and growth. But oftentimes, they're not providing a framework for employees to feel psychologically safe in the work environment. Our guest today is Chuck Moeller, founder, CEO, executive coach, and advisor at MCG Partners. And we're going to be discussing the importance of psychological safety at work, including why it's important and how you can help to build a more psychologically safe work environment for your employees. Welcome, Chuck, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Tani. Thank you for having me.
You and I have chatted in the past, but I want to make sure that for our listeners who don't know you, that you tell everyone a little bit about yourself. Why have you here as our guest on this topic? And then a little bit about MCG Partners as well.
Sure. Oh, thank you for that. I've been in management consulting most of my career. Hate to say over 35 years. My background was everything from strategy to change management. I even did some process re-engineering right out of undergrad, going way back. But I've been in the leadership talent management space now for 25 plus years, and it's become a real passion for me. And I have a management background as well. I've worked in big consulting, small boutique consulting, startups. So I've really kind of seen the whole gambit. And then I eventually became the CEO of a global consulting firm for a number of years. We did very well. We got acquired twice in 1 year, which was in 2006. I was a little burnt out. My kids were pretty young at the time, and I decided to start my own firm in 2007. So in doing that, I also became an executive coach. I really wanted to figure and find a way to channel my desire, my passion to make a difference. And executive coaching and advising seemed like a really good fit for me. So over those 15 plus years, we've really built a nice firm. It's MCG Partners, and we're really in three separate practices: leadership development, organizational effectiveness, and talent management. And leadership encompasses everything from executive coaching to leadership development programs, management training, succession planning, leadership team alignment work. We do a lot of work on the organizational practice when it comes to culture, when it comes to DEI work, when it comes to employee engagements, when it comes to team effectiveness, including what a surprise, psychological safety, and virtual hybrid workforce effectiveness. And our talent practice literally is about assessments, both behavioral and 360 assessments. So pretty comprehensive set of solutions, and got a great team, great clients, and thrilled to be here.
One of the things that I love when I learn someone's background and kind of how they got into what they're doing now is then taking pieces of what we're going to talk about during the course of the show and tying it into their background. And when you said that you were involved in an organization that was acquired twice in 1 year, in my mind, I'm like, wait a second, Chuck, we should be talking about change. We should be talking about responding effectively to change. And I think, you know, we're going to see some of that in this topic when we're talking about psychological safety generally. But, you know, I'm sure that there's some listeners who, when they heard what this topic was about, when they saw the title of today's show, they're thinking to themselves, wait a second, Tani, what do you mean when we talk about psychological safety? So I'd like to start from a foundational level just to make sure we're all on the same playing field. What would you define psychological safety as?
No, it's a great reference and question, because I think not only do people wonder what that is, a lot of people have a different interpretation. So from my perspective, psychological safety covers simply really creating an environment where people feel safe on a variety of levels. Safe meaning I can fail without necessarily losing my job or getting reprimanded. I can challenge the status quo. I can question. I can provide ideas and suggestions without retaliation, or we don't care about your position or your views or ideas. So it's really creating an environment where people feel their opinion matters, what they do matters. And if they see a problem or an issue, a mistake, that there's going to be receptiveness to that. So that essentially is what psychological safety is.
It's interesting because I bet a lot of our listeners are thinking to themselves, like, something just clicked in their mind. Oh, that's our open door policy, which I feel like is a very 1980s kind of way in which we reference. I don't even want to say this concept because I think that the concept is much larger. But how would you say that this is different from an open door policy, which I think many of us recognize is less and less effective and maybe was never effective in the first place, even if people then have quote unquote doors on their office?
No, it's again a great point. I think for those of us around long enough, we understand what open door policy is. I think today, in with the multiple generations we have in the workforce, people just want to know and honestly, there's an aspect of inclusion to this, right? Inclusion means that I accept you as a whole person, meaning you and your perspectives, your ideas, your strengths, your weaknesses. How do I get the optimal best out of you as a person? So it's really way beyond an open door policy. Yes, it's great to be able to vent and share views and opinions, but it's really about creating a work environment that allows people to feel accepted, valued, and appreciated.
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Chuck Moeller, founder, CEO, executive coach, and advisor at MCG Partners. And we're discussing providing a psychologically safe work environment in a remote setting. So one of the things that we know, Chuck, is in a remote setting, I mean, the open door kind of aspect of things is quite different. In a lot of organizations, there would be very little face-to-face interactions. It's my hope that even if someone was working remotely, that they would still be having face-to-face interactions with managers or subordinates. But how did you find that kind of concepts of psychological safety evolved as we moved towards a much more remote setting? And in part, I think, due to COVID, and I think in other ways we might have been shifting that way just naturally as well.
Yeah, I think you already made reference to one aspect that's really had a huge impact, which is change. Now, before COVID, and sometimes we forget life before COVID, right? It seems like it's been forever. It's been, almost 3 years now, a little under 3 years. But the intensity of change has continued to increase for a variety of reasons. Global competition, companies shifting direction or strategy, the needs of the marketplace, the needs of the consumer, the needs of organizations. So the cycle of innovation is getting shorter and shorter, right? We live in the Amazon world, right, where we all want everything yesterday or tomorrow at our doorsteps, right? And we get bored easily. We want something new and different. So think about those cycles of innovation getting shorter and shorter, and the pressure that puts on organizations to respond, to be rapid, to be innovative, to be agile. As you probably know, I wrote a book recently called The Rise of the Agile Leader, Can You Make the Shift? We make reference to a lot of what we're talking about today in terms of how to be agile, both as an organization, but frankly, as an individual. But again, to create that agility, you have to create the right work environment, right? So you're dealing with the intensity of change. You're dealing with the pressures you just acknowledged with working remote and virtual. That's huge shift for, even though it's not a new concept, I mean, remote virtual work, hybrid work has been around for quite some time, but literally when everyone's forced to do it, or the majority of us are forced to do it, has huge implications. Are you actually able to be effective working out of your house? What's going on behind the scenes in terms of whether it's parents or children or space issues or technology issues, or even for some of us not even having internet access issues. So we take some of these things for granted, depending on where we live and what our individual family situations are. So that's really related to this whole mental health issue because of all the stress and pressure of not only the demands of work and how work's constantly changing and shifting, as I just made reference to, but also the pressure and stress, what's going on in your personal life. So all these things have compounded the last couple of years. So this whole notion of managers really focusing on the well-being of their employees, which really translates into psychological safety, is really, really critical.
I'm sure that we have some listeners who are thinking to themselves, this is great, Tani, but I know that I provide a psychologically safe work environment. No one's ever told me they don't feel safe with me. But if we go to, a statement you just said, there's things we take for granted, right? I think one of the things that a lot of people take for granted is that they don't 100% understand how they're perceived, right? Which is a flaw that all of us have. Okay. So I'm not just saying that, hey, the one listener who's listening out there is this way. You know, we all have that flaw to a certain extent. So when we're talking about kind of that psychological safety, what are some behaviors that managers or people in leadership roles may participate in that either hinder or adversely affect kind of a culture that has psychological safety?
Yeah, that's great. And there's so many elements to this. I'll try to capture a few key ones. I think one starts with the manager and mindset. What I mean by that is, we live in such an intense, high-speed world, personally and professionally now. And I advocate this on so many ways in so many areas. But something very simple, are you starting your day every day for 10 seconds to say, what am I trying to address today? How am I making sure that I'm addressing each of my people and how to make sure they feel valued and appreciated? Am I spending enough quality time one-on-one to check in with my people, not just about their responsibilities and their progress of their goals and objectives and their job and their career, but them as people? So this mindset of reflecting, and we always think reflecting is sort of like this, meditation, spiritual thing. And yes, there's an element of that. But reflection really is that pause at the beginning of each day, at the end of each day, to really think about what am I trying to accomplish, not just in my job or my responsibilities, and yes, being more strategic, but also when it comes to my people. And unfortunately, the biggest challenge we have right now, and we have to own it, we can disrupt this, is getting out of the back-to-back, Zoom and Teams and virtual meetings that we're all in. And there's not an executive out there and a company out there that's not struggling with this issue. But the only way it's going to change if you force that change, you create strong disruption to say, how do we break this cycle so I can actually have time to think, not only for myself as a manager, but for my people? Do my people have a chance to think, have a chance to plan, have a chance to have interactions, not only with me as a boss, but also with each other? How many sessions are we really, developing relationships, establishing trust, getting to really know each other, especially since so many people are now being hired virtually or being onboarded virtually or not having a chance to meet their colleagues in person that often. So there's so many critical elements to this when it comes to how a manager reflects on themselves. And you said about behavior, a manager needs to really understand for themselves, what's their natural style and how they communicate, how they make decisions, how they develop relationships, how they deal with change, how they deal with risk. And they need to understand with their employees. So the more we can understand each other behaviorally, what motivates and drives us, the more effective we can be in how we connect, how we build teams, how we communicate, how we establish trust.
It's interesting because here I am, we're talking about this topic and in my mind, I'm like, okay, so I have to make space to give thought to how to make space. And it's one of those ideas where I'm thinking, okay, today it's back to back as well, like just like so many other people across the country, back to back meetings, but let's build in that space and time for me to make space and time so that my day doesn't look like that in the future. And I think concepts like that oftentimes just feel overwhelming when you're saying you have to do something in order to create a strategy. Like I need to get organized so that in the future I can be more organized. I think oftentimes, at least with the clients I work with, when you say something like that, it's almost like, okay, I'm done. I understand how to solve this problem. But even that first step seems unattainable for me.
No, very valid. And it's true. And I use the metaphor, and this is not, by the way, a biased comment in terms of whether one likes to work out or not. But let me just use this example. But sometimes we have this mindset, and for a lot of us that have fallen off the exercise wagon, or never even got on it, a lot of us start this routine in January. It's the new year. We're gonna be healthy. We're gonna take care of ourselves. And then, and to your point, it becomes overwhelming, right? Because what happens? We go in it with this great attitude, a lot of passion. We work out like crazy, and we expect immediate results. And we're hurting, and it's like it's not working. We give up, right? Because one, it takes time. Actually, it takes several months to demonstrate any kind of physical change, both in terms of whatever you're trying to do, lose weight, gain muscle, just be healthier, feel better. It takes months, and it takes discipline of doing this, 3 times a week to be able to achieve that. And you're not going to get immediate results. When it comes to ourselves behaviorally, or when it comes to changing our routine and what we do, it's no different. You just can't expect immediate change. You have to think of these things at a very interval level. So let me give you a very specific example. An exercise I give to a lot of my executives, especially when they're not spending time where they want to or they need to, is let's pull out your calendar. Let's pull out your calendar the last 2 months. Your calendar doesn't lie. We all think we're spending our time, XYZ. But it's amazing when I ask people, right, categorize where you spend your time, whatever it may be, being strategic, day to day, meetings, online, whatever the categories may be. And you go back and actually look at your calendar for 2 months. And sure, you're always going to have some anomaly in there. Something came up where maybe your week wasn't typical. But today, no one's week is that typical anymore, right? So but if you go back 2 months, maybe three, that makes you feel better. You'll be shocked. Everybody is to say, oh my God, I didn't realize where I'm spending my time. So the biggest challenge we have today for all of us, any employees, especially managers at any level, is we're a victim of our calendar. No, you got to change that. You have to start owning your calendar, owning where you spend your time, owning where everyone else is spending their time. And that means a collective discussion, so be it. But you have to start today and start slowly, one day at a time, to see what can we take off our calendar, or what's the one thing we can change as of right now. So you're not going to change everything overnight. But start with the one. Then the next week, what's the second? And then what's the third? So do it incrementally, because it's not going to happen overnight, to my earlier example.
I think those are some really great comparators for us to keep at top of mind and give that a little bit of thought as we take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMA Career.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Chuck Moeller, founder, CEO, executive coach, and advisor at MCG Partners. And today we've been discussing the importance of psychological safety at work, including why it's important and how it can help build a more psychologically safe environment for your employees. Before the break, we were talking about kind of mindset, how important it is for managers to really understand and give thought to how they're acting, how they're behaving, the effect that that's having on psychological safety within the work environment. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, Chuck, was that one of the ways in which managers can provide psychological safety is as it relates to mistakes. Can somebody fail without losing their job was, I think, the example that you gave. Talk to me more about how managers can kind of help to build a culture that does focus in on mistakes are okay and are acceptable because it means that you're stretching.
Yeah, so let me start with really two examples, real examples. One example is a consumer products company, very successful. Everybody would know it if I mentioned their name. And their CEO was all about innovation. And he created a head of innovation for his company. They created innovation teams, their innovation meetings. He wanted to change the culture around innovation. And it was actually, you know, really good stuff. And they came out with some new products. And then when there was an immediate success, the CEO sort of had a negative reaction and kind of hit the wrist pretty hard with some people. And there's no faster way to suck out the energy of innovation than having a reaction that way. And I'm not saying it's not warranted on occasion, but that's the challenge with innovation or creating ideas or challenging anything. When people feel there's not receptiveness, there's not openness, there's not a willingness to try, because we forget this one simple equation or formula. Without failure, there is no innovation. We don't get it right the first time. Think about any successful company, product, innovation that we've seen in our modern history. There's been lots and lots of failure mistakes to get there. So, but unfortunately, the pressure of running a business, running a division, shareholders, being public, private, family owned, whatever it is, there's a lot of pressure today to get it right and to be profitable. So I understand that. So there has to be sort of an acceptable definition and boundary of what is, an acceptable level of failure or mistake. And people need to understand that. People need to understand what those expectations are.
It's interesting too, because as you were describing this, I'm in the middle of a biography of a successful business person, and I'm very much enjoying the book. And I was thinking to myself, imagine for our other listeners who enjoy, you know, reading kind of about either business organizations and how they came to be. If the first time they tried something, they were successful. Here's your 10-page book. One day we came up with this idea, it was successful, and now look, here we are. Instead, you see these tomes. And I think in large part, you see kind of these large novels because there is the success and then the failure, and then the success and the failure. And there is very rarely going to be a straight line between where an organization or a manager starts and where they ultimately end.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes we forget, and I hate to say it, the more experience we have, and then when we start having great success and we rise into our career, we sometimes forget how we got here. And we forget about those trials and tribulations and falling down and mistakes and failures. And we need to remember that as we manage and mentor and cultivate the next generations around us. So let me give the opposite example, because I said I had two, and this is just as a good example. There's one, this is actually a case study, a business school case study, so I'm not making it up. There's one particular CEO in high tech, mid-sized firm. He used to have, you know, open town forums in their lobby. And, you know, this CEO is known for celebrating successes. And there's one particular project team that had a client problem. And they bombed. It didn't go well. The client actually left the firm. This CEO, in front of whatever it was, probably a couple hundred people, wrote a bonus check out, to everybody on that team, probably five or six people, to thank them for their effort, even though it was a complete failure. And the client left, but he wrote out a check and said to the whole entire company, I applaud, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, I applaud the effort. Thank you for your effort and your trying, for trying to come up with the best solution you could possibly provide. And it didn't work. And that was it. But he celebrated. And think about how these people felt. Here they're thinking, maybe I'm going to lose my job. Instead, he's celebrating their effort. That same team, true story, same team, a few months later, came up with a solution that ended up generating that company like 10 times the revenue that they ended up losing for that one particular client. So the point being is that it's amazing what happens when you, and that's an extreme example, of course, but it's amazing what happens when you're there to support your people through difficult times, whether it's a failure or mistake or not. It's really about, again, as managers, how we show up with our people when they're struggling or not performing or making a mistake or having an error.
So kind of tying into that and related to that concept, I'm sure we have some listeners who are thinking, okay, that works, but now let's bring it into the hybrid workforce. And I know that your firm has some publications where they reference the three C's for a hybrid workforce. Can you explain what those three C's are? And then I'll probably want to get into some more detail on each of them.
Sure. Yes. One of my wonderful colleagues wrote this article. And by the way, I'll give her some due. Her name's Heather Wood. And it was around the three C's, which is communication, clarity, and compassion.
So if we take each of those, and maybe even we use kind of the, I don't want to say hypothetical. In my world, I always use hypotheticals. But the case study that you were just talking about, let's focus in on communication. What are kind of three elements that you have found in working with clients that managers should keep at top of mind when they're communicating? I mean, you were talking about the case study where we have the manager getting up there in front of the team and really thanking this team for trying, even though they failed. In the remote environment, what have you found to be successful from a communication strategy to communicate something similar and to help create that psychological safety?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different key things when it comes to communication. You know, first would be, are we simply asking how everybody's doing? Are we checking with them as people? Not just jumping right into the business agenda. Yes, being very clear on what that agenda may be and what time frame we have, and making sure we start on time, we end on time. Those are really critical things. And I think we all struggle with that at times. I know I do. So I'm not calling the kettle black here. So I think parameters on those things are really critical. And then, of course, checking with people just to see, hey, how are things going? You know, what's going on in your life? And it's a chance to really, and it all depends on how big the team is that you're having this meeting with, right? If you're talking about 20 plus people, that may be really difficult to do, but there's got to be a way to kind of break the ice and check in with people and talk about something fun just to kind of get people to feel relaxed and engaged. And also making sure that people have a chance to participate. I mean, I think one of the challenges with communication today, it's so one dimensional, meaning it's usually the person running the meeting doing all the talking. There's not as much interaction as there has been when it's in person. So making sure that communication is interactive, that people can ask questions, again, and the respective amount of time they have, depending on the topic, and that you stay on topic. You know, if something comes up that needs to be addressed, you acknowledge it, you appreciate, you thank a person for their input. Going back to psychological safety, you want to acknowledge people for their comments, whether you agree or disagree, for their ideas or suggestions. Something may come up, has nothing to do with that particular agenda. You want to acknowledge that comment and the idea and the suggestion and couch it for either a one-on-one discussion as a follow-up or is becoming part of the agenda for the next meeting. So those are really, really critical aspects. The other part of communication that's really, really critical, going back to what I was saying, is structure and, you know, making sure that people understand, you know, what the agenda is, what the deliverables, what we're trying to accomplish, and what next steps are. Big problem meetings today is, what are the action items? You know, where do we make a decision on? What decisions do we need to make? You know, is there movement with our discussions? Or are people walking away saying, I have no idea what we discussed or what we decided? Do we decide on anything and what the next steps are? So that is really, really critical. And then meeting norms, you know, making sure that people agree that, yes, cameras on, We're putting away our laptops and our phones. We're not being distracted. We're all being fully present. We're all engaged. And all the other, you know, comments I made about structure earlier.
And it's interesting because I think if you are able to implement some of those things like actionables moving forward, that's going to place you in a position where you shouldn't by any means be the only person talking kind of within the course of a meeting. It's forcing that engagement by other members of the team to assist in that communication structure. So those are all really helpful kind of things to keep at top of mind. And I appreciate that. Let's jump to clarity. And I think some of that might have just come through in what you were discussing as well, especially as it relates to what a meeting is going to look like. What can people expect from the agenda, starting on time, those type of things. But if you were going to provide kind of other examples of clarity that's helpful in a remote setting to help provide that psychological safety, what would some of those things be?
Yeah, I think clarity is some of the things there's some overlap here, obviously, when it comes to communication and clarity. I think another element of clarity is understanding people's individual styles. You know, some people need a lot of detail. Some people are not very comfortable with concepts or you know, kind of high level discussion. So you got to know your audience. And everybody in the room needs to know their audience. And depending on the type of team and the level of team in terms of what the meeting is about, you need to understand your audience and make sure that the discussion, the agenda fits the audience. But having clarity on expectations, what we're going to discuss, what we're not discussing, you know, what feedback is you know, accepted, what's not, you know, so, you know, clarity on deadlines, measure successes are examples, clarity on next steps. And again, how we're going to have this meeting, how we want people to participate. Some of the things we've talked about as well. So when I think about clarity, that those, in addition to the things I already mentioned, those are the things I would add to that.
No, I think that's really helpful. And since it's important for me to provide clarity as well, we do still have one more C that I want to talk about, but it's time for us to take a quick break. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go fish, Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you, so you can try on new styles in the comfort of your own home. Stitch Fix is on your terms and priced to fit your budget. There's no subscription required, ever. Keep what you want and send back anything you don't. So, isn't it time you started nailing your look? Get started today at StitchFix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for women, men, and kids. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Chuck Moeller, founder, CEO, executive coach, and advisor at MCG Partners. And today we're discussing psychological safety in the remote world. Before the break, you heard Chuck discussing two of the three C's concerning hybrid workforce and helping to create a psychologically safe environment for our employees. And we spent some time talking about communication and clarity and the importance of both of those elements as it relates to psychological safety when we're working remotely. Chuck, can you give us a little bit of an understanding as it relates to the third C, which is compassion? Because I know we have some listeners who are like, whoa, Tani, compassion, that sounds really close to love. I've sat through your sexual harassment presentations. I know we're not supposed to use those type of words at work. But talk to me about compassion and what we're looking for here when we're tying it into psychological safety.
Yeah, it's a big area in many ways, right? Because you think about the not only the hybrid and virtual workforce challenges in terms of psychological safety, but also all the turnover. We know the great resignation. Now we're focusing on the great retention. And, you know, what used to be sort of a line we never crossed, which is, you know, talking about people as people, as a company, you know, demonstrating you care about them as a person, not just as an employee. So we're really entering a whole new era of employer-employee relationships and understanding and manager and employer relationships, where lines that typically were considered maybe even inappropriate are now appropriate. Yes, there clearly still are some parameters there and boundaries, of course, but demonstrating that you care. So when you think about compassion, it's really about, are you truly, you know, not only being empathetic, but are you caring? Are you caring in a real, authentic, interested way? And people, we all know when someone really is interested in our well-being, and that really is, are we interested in the well-being of our people? And so when you think about compassion, you know, if there are deadlines being not addressed, it's one thing if it's happening every week or every month or on a consistent basis, a pattern. But is there really a valid reasoning based upon what's going on in a person's life? That's an example of where we can demonstrate some compassion. Watching out for burnout or a person that maybe is disconnected or seems to be struggling. And yes, the old school method was let's focus on performance. But now it's really understanding what's going on in this person. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should compromise goals and objectives or performance or progress. But there are moments today where we have to truly understand what's going on in the person in their life, especially if they've demonstrated high performance, high engagement, and a track record of being a great employee. So when we start about talking about compassion, I think it encompasses all those things.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this is something that I deal with, you know, on a daily basis, because I feel as though compassion and trust are two things that are very intertwined, and that the more compassionate you are to a person, the more trust you're going to build with that individual. And then the higher likelihood it is that you're going to be able to have very honest discussions. You're going to be able to understand what's going on in that employee's life when you see a change in work product, to be able to have that discussion. And also, if there are things going on in your organization that you're unaware of, if you have employees who have built that trust with you, I think there's a higher likelihood that you're going to have accessibility into understanding those situations. So it's interesting because I think compassion becomes that really touchy-feely word, even though it's so very important and it builds off so many of the other aspects of both clarity and communication that you were talking about earlier. But when I talk about touchy-feely things, I then like to jump to the polar opposite. Our listeners are very used to me doing that because I know that there's some people who are listening and they're either driving to work, they're exercising. They're like, okay, Tani, move past the touchy-feely stuff. You focus too much on that. Tell me about how I deal with that employee who is challenging the status quo, who's doing everything that you're saying is good. They're trying to fail, they're challenging, they're innovating, but they feel as though it's their job to be challenging and difficult and to challenge the status quo, and everything that management is doing, they're going to have a quip about, or they're going to come back and say it wasn't enough. So when we're talking about psychological safety, but we have an employee like that, right? How do we manage that employee without simultaneously stifling the evolution of other team members or making other team members feel uncomfortable?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I mean, you know, there's some people out there that have strong personalities and very passionate. They're not have strong personality and feel really a responsibility of being kind of a voice for not only themselves, but have anointed themselves a voice for their team or their, their company. We're all smiling when we hear that example because we've all seen it. We've all lived it. We've all been there. I think as a manager, it's a delicate situation. I think one, you have to continue to embrace and welcome that. And then you have to make sure that through some one-on-one mentorship and coaching, making sure that person's being respectful and asking the person, it's not about telling a person what they're doing or not doing. It's really more, hey, look, I really appreciate everything you're trying to do, but I'm noticing that the rest of your team is quiet. I'm noticing that the other people in the room are not saying much. Could you help me, you know, help the rest of your colleagues feel their voice is just as important? So I think it's about guiding people who are very passionate that way and ensuring that they're not the only voice that's being heard, that the voice of others is also being heard, and that they're being respectful. They're being respectful to the people in the room. And that, you know, and it goes, this evolves into conflict because sometimes where people may disagree with that person or anybody for that matter. And how do we manage that sort of conflict in a healthy way? Because one of the biggest challenges in this started before COVID, something we talk a lot about and I've talked a lot about and we work on often is having healthy conflict. You know, we become so conflict avoidant in so many ways, right? God forbid I disagree. I'm no longer now part of the majority. I have a different opinion or different values or different view. You know, we now live in this woke and cancel culture environment where people truly are concerned, afraid of having a dissident voice because, hey, I may get banned or tar and feathered or even worse, lose my job. And these are real issues today. So I think creating an environment where, again, we have to agree to disagree. And we may disagree, and that's okay. But are we listening? Are we truly listening to what the person has to say? Are we cutting them off? Are we dismissing them? So these are all elements that are really, really critical, not just as a manager, but any employee, to make sure we demonstrate a willingness to listen to a person's viewpoint, and especially if they're passionate and are taking that on themselves or the whole entire company.
Thank you, Chuck. I think that those are some really, really important points and very helpful for our listeners. And I'm sure that there's some who are thinking, okay, Tani, let's swing it to the polar opposite. Not the employee who is loud and boisterous and kind of speaking for the whole organization, but how do I provide psychological safety to my introverted team members, to the ones who maybe aren't speaking up even when I'm seeking their thoughts or opinions on things? How do I connect and make sure that they feel psychologically safe in the work environment?
Yeah, I mean, there's many examples of that, but I'll stick with two. One, as a manager, you have to demonstrate your level of vulnerability. And again, that's not a concept or word that a lot of managers have necessarily a lot of comfort in, but I think it's also important that managers admit when they're wrong. I mean, we sometimes as managers, we put so much pressure on ourselves as an executive at any level to say, I have to always be right, all right? So I have to always have the right answer. And no, you don't. And when you can demonstrate that I was wrong, that I made a mistake, or I don't know, or I need help, or I need feedback because I think I'm struggling with an area of my effectiveness. When you can demonstrate those qualities and characteristics, you're letting the rest of the organization know that's okay for themselves as well. So that's one example. The other example, especially for those who are very reserved and very introverted, you have to really get to know them one-on-one and get them and to feel comfortable, if at all, to participate. And there's some people that, frankly, are never going to participate in a group setting that much. So the key is, can you talk to them one-on-one? Can you get them to make sure that you understand how they're thinking, why they're thinking, what their views and concerns are? Because just because they're not saying something doesn't mean they only have a view and opinion, but it doesn't also mean they agree. I mean, how many times we walk out of a discussion and think, oh, we're all on the same page, we're all along. And then you find out like 2 days later that half the people in the room not only didn't agree, but have a completely different opinion or telling everybody else in the room. So there's also some passive aggressive behavior going on besides just introverted behavior.
That's so, those instant messages between coworkers that say, were we all in the same meeting?
Right, exactly. So I think really trying to make sure that you just don't quickly jump to conclusions. Everybody's on the same page, everybody's aligned, everybody agrees. So this whole notion of having healthy debate, healthy discussion, healthy disagreement is really, really critical.
I think those are really all very important points. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
Today, I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Chuck Moeller, founder, CEO, executive coach, and advisor at MCG Partners. And today we've been discussing the importance of creating psychological safety at work. We've talked about ways to engage with employees, how to make sure they feel as though they're being heard. We've talked about communication, clarity, compassion. You know, Chuck, I am pretty sure, however, that we have some listeners who are thinking, okay, Tawny, you're almost an hour in telling me about psychological safety, but I haven't focused on this in the past, and we're operating just fine. Why should I kind of take any of the things that you all have been talking about today into account when I'm operating the business that I've been in for the last few decades?
Yeah, no, great question. And there's really two things I would say. One thing I would talk about would be employee engagement. So employee engagement's been around for a long time. For those who are not familiar with it, essentially is about how people go beyond the minimal requirements of their job. That's how engagement's essentially measured. And they're usually measured through employee engagement or employee satisfaction surveys or pulse surveys. Pulse surveys could be every week, could be every month. Employee engagement surveys are typically once every 1 or 2 years. And the nice thing about that, for those who are not familiar with this, look it up. There's a correlation to the more engaged your workforce is to how financially you perform. So the higher engagement, the more financially successful you are. And we're talking about research for over 20 years. So it's not just some loose recent research. It truly is a correlation. Why am I bringing this up? Because going back to psychological safety, when people feel valued, appreciated, and their opinion matters, they're going to go beyond the minimum requirements of their job. Therefore, they're going to be more engaged. Therefore, your organization is going to be not only a stronger culture, but also have high level performance and financial performance. So that's one piece I want to mention. The second piece, for those who are thinking, well, give me something I could read about. You know, this is all great theory, but is there an example out there? And I would say to those, yes, there is. And I love to say this, you can Google. So, Google itself did a study a couple of years ago that said, what are the characteristics that create high-performing teams? And guess what? What a surprise. The number one characteristic was psychological safety. So for those who really want to read a really great example, go out and Google.
I think that for a lot of our listeners, all they had to hear was that this does have a financial impact. And, you know, right now, as we're dealing with a lot of people who are, you know, the great resignation, they're moving between organizations. If you consider just the amount of costs associated with hiring new employees, with onboarding new employees, understanding that if your employees are leaving as a result of lack of psychological safety, that further plays a big role in why this is important. I mean, ultimately, it does come down to financials, even when I frame it in that format. But I think those are really great and helpful resources, Chuck, that you mentioned. So thank you for that. And with that, you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Chuck, thank you so much for this whole conversation. I really enjoyed it. For our listeners who are interested in hearing more of your thoughts and opinions on management generally and psychological safety more specifically, is there a way that they can connect with you?
Sure. You know, people can look me up on LinkedIn. It's Chuck. My last name is spelled M-O-L-L-O-R. If you want to look at my firm, the firm is mcgpartners.com.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Chuck. And thank you to our listeners. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone. And remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.